Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 1, Text 43. Utsannakula dharmanam manushyanam janardana narake niyatam vaso bhavati tyanushushrama. Anushushrama. This is Arjuna speaking. O Krishna, maintainer of the people, I have heard by disciplic succession that those whose family traditions are destroyed dwell always in hell. Purport. Arjuna bases his argument not on his own personal experience, but on what he has heard from the authorities. That is the way of receiving real knowledge. One cannot reach the real point of factual knowledge without being helped by the right person who is already established in that knowledge. There is a system in the Varnashram institution by which before death one has to undergo the process of atonement for his sinful activities. One who is always engaged in sinful activities must utilize the process of atonement called prayaschitta. Without doing so, one surely will be transferred to hellish planets to undergo miserable lives as the result of sinful activities. Utsannakula dharmanam manushyanam janadana narake niyatam vaso bhavatityanushushrama. O Krishna, maintainer of the people, I have heard by disciplic succession that those whose family traditions are destroyed dwell always in hell. Bhagavad Gita means what is spoken by Krishna to Arjuna, his instructions to Arjuna. But it appears here that Arjuna is trying to instruct Krishna. He says, well, I heard this from authorities. In other words, he's telling Krishna, you should take it very seriously. I'm not just speaking my opinion, but I've heard. He didn't consider that the authority of all authorities is Krishna. Okay, please don't take photos. Forget your gadgets. And listen attentively. Mobiles off. Please. Try and hear attentively. Of course, in Vedic culture, to appeal to or to cite an authority. Please don't take photos now. If you like, I'll sit after the class and you can all take photos. But during the class, please just listen. It's not just for passing the time, but there are grave topics to be discussed. So we would like if you could all hear very carefully. So the appeal to or citing authorities, that is authoritative, if that is not a trite statement. Shastra is understood to come from the Supreme Lord and to be transmitted by great personalities. So if we cite from Shastra or from great personalities, that is authoritative. Now, in the modern world, in the Western world, especially over the last few hundred years, the faith in authorities has eroded. First of all, of course, speaking about almost anything means to simplify it, but human history is especially complex, but the church was considered authoritative in Europe. The church at that time meant what is now called the Roman Catholic Church. But well, there was a split also into the Eastern Church. But that was considered authoritative, but for various reasons people came to suspect that authority and to reject that authority. And for various reasons. One major reason was the perception that those who were supposed to be authoritative persons did not act in a very religious way. Another reason was one gentleman called Galileo and people after him, who by looking through the telescope, they thought that, well, the church people say that the sun is going round the earth, but it looks to me like the earth is going round the sun. And so the church, which had been the authority on all matters, began to be doubted. And eventually from the in the Renaissance, as it's known, then we have the beginning of what is now humanistic and secular values, which received a big boost from one Charles Darwin, who Srila Prabhupada often spoke about in a not very favorable way. The idea that, well, we don't need any church or any religion or anyone to tell us anything. In England, famously, Henry VIII broke from the church and made himself the head of the church and the state. He rejected the authority of the church, and after some time people said, well, what do we need you? We don't need a king either. We don't need you as an authority. And then they made democracy, and everyone's supposed to be equal, and no one cares for anyone else. That's something like this in this Ritvik camp, within or on the edges of our ISKCON movement. They say, well, we don't care for it. We only care for Prabhupada. We don't care for any other authorities. And then within their camp, then the people say, well, who are you to tell me anything? There's no system of authority. It's just, if it's just me and Prabhupada, then what do we need anyone else? But when you're new, you definitely need someone to tell you everything. So you learned everything? Okay, so you can attend one camp. Everything you need to know about Krishna consciousness in 3 days, or teach yourself. But you can't teach yourself from a book, because you're only supposed to have Prabhupada's books. So it becomes, it's a ridiculous thing. Now among Ritvik camps, they're fighting each other. So I say to them, well, they say that according to them, Prabhupada is here in exactly the same way. He never left. So then you go to him and ask him. The two camps are fighting. So you go and ask. You say that Prabhupada's here in exactly the same way. He never left. So go and settle your dispute with him. It becomes ridiculous. Now one of them wants to take sannyas. Then who will he take sannyas? He'll take sannyas maybe directly from Prabhupada, but Prabhupada has to approve that. So it's ridiculous. They don't want to accept any authority. But the point we can say in the Western world, they say they're accepting the authority of Prabhupada, but not in the way that he set it up, with an institution and a movement. So although we could say the natural order, although modern secularists, humanists, and scientists don't believe in any natural order, which was accepted in the Western world in the distant past, distant according to the modern historical perspective, and which is accepted definitely in the Vedic perspective and is called dharma, But those who don't want to accept any natural order, they don't want to accept any authority, although, as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, we may say, I am independent, but we are all under the control of time. And you may say, I am the authority, but there is an authority which seizes the very life which you consider to be all in all. In other words, you have to die. You are under control. There are powers beyond you which you cannot oppose. The power of time destroys, takes away your present existence. But in one sense you can say it's natural if people reject authorities. If the authority is perceived as not acting in a way that is beneficial for us, we accept the Matri Devo Bhava. We accept the mother. We expect the mother will be the first authority. Is the mother, because we expect the mother acts only for our benefit. The father, the acharya, we expect that Pitri Devo Bhava, Acharya Devo Bhava. And the Titi, well, may not act for our benefit, but we should act for their benefit. If Atiti means, actually we think that it is a chance for us to serve them, not that I'm benefiting them. So we accept them as natural authorities, mother, father, but that is also breaking down in the modern world, which we never saw in Indian culture, that the son will defy the father, but that's also coming. That's, you can say, due to the influence of Western so-called civilization, or it may be the same reason, that it's not perceived that the father actually has my self-interest at heart. We expect the mother to have the self-interest of the child at heart. But in many cases, the children are born because the mother decided not to have an abortion. She was thinking about it, but then she decided not to. So it's only a slight chance that the child survived. And the mothers in the modern age, they're in so many cases, they're more interested in having a career and having money and being independent and enjoying themselves. So the child becomes an obstacle in all that. So the child is not very much loved. They don't know what his mother's love. So the child may not accept the authority. In the modern age, it seems to be the normal thing or the natural thing to not accept an authority, because if you do, you're liable to be cheated. The normal thing, the natural order is with that we accept an authority. We accept the authority of mother, father, all elder people, Brahmins, gurus, of Bhagavan. But in the modern age, it seems to be that just to survive, then you have to look after yourself. Don't care for anyone else, because no one cares for you. But this is a miserable life. I mean, even the rats and the crows, which are not, they're considered very low, but they work together. They cooperate together. They're not very much inclined to humans, but they work together. If you try to attack one crow, you'll get a whole group of crows attacking you. They work together. So, to hear from authorities, to accept an authority, that is the natural order, but especially in the modern age, it's also intelligent to maintain a healthy doubt. Hopefully, we don't have parents in whom we might doubt, although that doubt might be implanted by bad association. The children go to school, and then their playmates, they tell them, well, your parents, that all this Hare Krishna, what's that? You should drink and smoke and eat meat. And then the children may want to go against the parents, because they think, oh, all the other kids and their parents, they all drink and smoke and eat meat, and why are they restricting me? So the children, even if brought up or as best as the parents think they can do, then the children, due to bad association, may accept some other authority. So it's important to know who is the actual proper authority. Therefore, it is enjoined that we should look and see. Don't accept any authority blindly. And frankly, although we don't speak about these things, I think we should speak about them more, because it is a fact of life in our ISKCON society. There has been much misuse of authority also. And those who are coming, I feel, should be made aware of that. Of course, in the internet age, anyone who floats around the internet, which means everyone who's from the newer generation and a lot from the older generation also, they can find out all these things without having to be told. But it's better, as I see it, that we tell them, and then they can get a better perspective on all these things. And that's why I was just speaking about this Ritvikism movement that rejects any intermediate authority than Srila Prabhupada. Of course, they say we accept the authority structure, but they don't. Not the authority structure that Srila Prabhupada set up. That also came out, it began largely due to discontent with the way authority was being exercised within the movement. So this is symptomatic of Kali Yuga. Of course, authorities are required. We can't be without any authority. I'm speaking of authority mostly in the sense of someone who gives orders. But there's another meaning of the English word authority, and this is actually the one that Arjuna is stressing on, or when he says, he says, Anushushrama, I have heard, but it's, I have heard in disciplic succession. But that gives the sense that he's heard from an authoritative source. So authority in this sense means one who knows what he's talking about. So that's another use of the word authority. This person is a biochemist, a pharmacist. So obviously he's an authority on pharmacy, or he may be an authority on some particular area within the science of pharmacy and pharmaceuticals, because it's a very big. There may be just a few scientists in the world who are experimenting with certain new drugs, so they are considered the authority in the matter. But in the case of Vedic authority, those who know, they're also the authority in the sense that they give instructions. Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, especially. But Brahmanas, they tend to give the guidelines which the Kshatriyas put into actions, but Kshatriyas are also supposed to know what is dharma. And they, because then they also have to be a check and balance against the Brahmanas. If the Brahmanas start saying something wrong, then the Kshatriyas, they also have to know, they're not expected to know as much detail as the Brahmanas, because the Brahmanas, they're supposed to just dedicate themselves fully to study, whereas the Kshatriyas, they're also supposed to be versed in Vedic knowledge, but they are supposed to be very active in the world and regulating the society so that it follows dharma. But they have to be knowledgeable enough to know, to have an understanding, basic understanding of what is dharma, and so that they can do that. And also, if they have some doubt in the advice of a brahmana, then they can question him. And in such a case, the brahmana has to, as Arjuna is purporting to do here, the brahmana has to give evidence for what he says from Shastra or from authorities, the behavior of persons who are respected as being the embodiments of the teachings of Shastra. Because Shastra can't cover every situation, every possible situation. There are unlimited possibilities of what could happen in the world. We don't find in Shastra how one should behave if faced with such and such a person, such and such a situation in detail, because in every person is different, every situation is different. So, but from the behavior of saintly persons, we can understand or we can deduce what we should do in some situation that we find ourselves. That's why we talk about Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. We take direction from Guru. Guru takes direction from Shastra. Everyone takes direction from Shastra. Guru gives us direction specific to our situation according to Shastra, and also both the all persons, they take direction from the behavior of great saintly persons, sadhus, what they've done, how they've behaved, what are their explanations of Shastra. So these are authorities. So we need authorities. If, as the saying goes, one who calls himself his own guru has a fool as a disciple. So it's not, he's a fool as a disciple, that means that he's a fool as a guru also. I mean, he's a fool. One has to accept someone who knows better than him. Now Arjuna is saying, I have heard from authorities. He doesn't consider that Krishna's right in front of Krishna is the greatest authority, and whatever anyone may be, anyone who's known as authority is only an authority because he follows Krishna. So instead of giving this whole speech to Krishna about dharma, and it's not proper to fight, and there'll be Varnasangara, he could have just asked Krishna. But instead he wanted to tell Krishna. So in this way, Arjuna became a bogus guru. But Krishna was intelligent enough not to be persuaded by him. And Krishna said, oh, I never thought about that before. Hey, okay, let's turn around the horses and gallop off the field as fast as we can. Arjuna wanted to go and meditate, and Krishna said, okay, well, actually, you are Nara and I'm Narayana, so let's take these quick chariot up to the Himalayas and go back and meditate. But that that was meant for another time and place and circumstance. In this circumstance, Arjuna was meant for fighting. But he appealed to authority to present what was a bogus argument. So that's another point. We may hear from authority, we may quote from authority, but if we can take a bogus argument. If we ourselves are bogus, or we have some ulterior motive, then we can quote authority to act in an unauthorized manner. As the saying goes in English, it's the devil quoting scripture. That we'll take the scripture and use it to act like the devil. Although the devil only appears in the Abrahamic scriptures. The devil in Shastra is, who is the problem? Me, myself. There's this idea in Christianity and Islam and Judaism, you blame the devil, it's all his fault. But it's all our fault. That's the actual fact. So there are so many examples of this. Many people, especially in the past, when there was lots of friction between Protestants and Catholics, they used to think that the Pope was the devil or the Antichrist. Or the church itself, they reinterpreted the teachings of scripture. Just like in Islamic banks up to the present day, they're not supposed to take interest. Is that what they do? They're not supposed to take interest. Because according to the Quran, usury or making a profit on lending money, that is considered a sin. But guess what? It's the same in the Bible. They both, Quran and the Bible, are very similar, except that in the New Testament of the Bible, Jesus Christ is accepted as the Messiah, whereas not so in the Quran, but they accept Muhammad, peace be upon him, as the prophet. Otherwise, they're very similar in many ways. So it's also forbidden in Christianity. So how come it goes on rampantly in Christianity? Well, at some point, the church decided that, well, lending money and making interest is okay if you take a risk, if it's a business risk, if you do so. So you're not just making a profit, but you're also taking a business risk. And then it goes on fully. They made a little compromise there. So practically usury, it became no longer sinful by redefining it. So there are various ways in which we can quote the authority, but really our own purpose is to do what we want to do. Or another common thing said is that, well, you don't exactly take the words of scripture or guru, sadhu, or shastra, but you have to take the essence, which there is, or there can be truth in that statement, but more often than not, it's just that someone uses that as an excuse just to avoid what's in scripture, and while pretending to follow, because it would be undiplomatic to not do so, one actually doesn't follow. That's what the, again, in Islam, they accuse Baha'is and Aga Khanis and Ahmadiyyas of just calling themselves Muslims, but actually they're doing something else completely different, which is probably true if you accept the one of the two orthodox interpretations, what are considered orthodox interpretations of Islam. So, despite all this, the fact remains that we do require an authority to even to live in this world. We can't bark authority. This simple example which Srila Prabhupada gave time and time again is that in every country there's a particular side of the road you have to drive on. And if you drive on, you may say, well, I don't care for any authority, and you just drive on the wrong side of the road. You're likely to get in an accident and or get into trouble with the police. So that's a very simple example, and there can be much more serious examples. Just like if you don't accept the whole authority of the structure of the state and you want to make a revolution, you could end up being executed for treason. If you drive on the wrong side of the road, you'll probably get fined and your driving license taken away. But if you do more severe crimes, you'd like to get a more severe punishment. In other words, you can't. You may say, I don't accept any authority, but practically, we have to. We can't live independent of authority, and more so in the matter of spiritual life. We need guidance. Spiritual life, what does spiritual life mean? It means that here we are in this situation that we find ourselves in. We're not content with it. And we know we have to find out that which is beyond the normal course of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, working, earning money, enjoying ourselves, all these things, getting married, having children. We feel there's something more, there's something beyond, but we can't find that without some guidance. Now, some people say, well, you don't have to take any guidance, you just meditate and look inside yourself and you'll find everything there. But in telling you that, they're also giving guidance. So you may say, well, I tried meditating. How do you meditate, by the way? So you have to take guidance. It's not a do-it-yourself project. One requires guidance. And there can be many diversions along the way. Shurasya dhara nishita duratyaya durgang patas tat kavayo badanti. Spiritual life, it's like a razor's, sharp as a razor. So say the learned persons. Churasidhara Anishita Dura. It's very difficult to traverse the path of spiritual life. Sharp like a razor. Very difficult to go along. So we require guidance. But at the same time, we should be cautious of an authority. How did these two things work out? Well, what do? You could take little guidance here, little guidance there, but that doesn't work. One has to take overall guidance, surrender, this word Srila Prabhupada used. One has to submit oneself to an authority. There is the eclectic process by which we, okay, I'll take a little bit from here, a little bit from there, but that means we're not really accepting an authority. An authority means we have to accept guidance of Guru. Something like the way a child takes shelter of the mother, means with complete trust. Of course, the disciple has to be intelligent and not like a baby, totally dependent. Of course, we are totally dependent on the mercy of Guru, but at the same time, that mercy manifests as giving us the knowledge by which to exercise our intelligence and discrimination. But it does require surrender, submission, with the understanding that this person knows better than me, I require to be guided. Arjuna wasn't like that. He thought, well, now Krishna's become my chariot driver, so I'm superior to him. I should tell him what to do. But he forgot that actually not only he, Arjuna, but the whole universe is subordinate to Krishna. So Arjuna should not have been so haughty as to express his own opinion. Now you may say, who are you? Who are you? Who am I to talk like this about Arjuna? Well, this attitude of Arjuna is perceived that's stated in the commentaries of acharyas in the Madhva Sampradaya. These boys are playing, they can either play somewhere else, or if it's possible for them, they could sit and listen. And maybe not possible for them. So, authorities are required, but there is great mistrust of authorities. We used to have kings, now there are no kings. People don't trust there's any one person. So we'll have elections and vote and have democracy. Of course, the elections are going on in India. Now, I just want to ask a question which is really nothing to do with anything spiritual, but I'm just curious about the world around me that I live in. Can you vote being NRIs? Only if you go to India. So there's a lot of Indian citizens who don't get to vote. That's a fault in the process, it seems. Okay, now I know. I was just curious about that. Seeing as I'm here and the elections are going on over there. But I don't know if people really trust the leaders who they vote for. Is there anyone you can really trust? And a lot of people seem to have a lot of trust, especially the ones who seem to be invoking some trust are Modi and Kejriwal. Although Kejriwal's hopes seem to have gone down after he said that the media is bought off, and then naturally the media didn't treat him very kindly after that. So, can you really trust that the politicians are really acting for the benefit of the country? It used to be said in India, the politicians used to come and say, I'm doing this as seva. But no one, seva is translated as service, but the word seva, it actually, the English word service and the Indian word seva are not exactly the same. Seva means that you do it out of a sense of duty and respect and selflessly. So when the politicians come and say that actually I'm doing this for seva, no one believed them. They know if you're a politician, you're doing it for your own personal benefit. That's generally thought of like that. So who can trust? That's why we find in America, when they have presidential elections, hardly half the electorate vote. Most of them vote with their feet, as they say. They're not satisfied with the whole process. They don't think that... Actually, this was... There was an advertisement put, I believe that was during Nixon's election time. During the presidential elections in America, this would be back in the 1970s, that Nixon, the opposing party, the Democrats, they ran a TV advertisement showing his picture saying, would you buy a used car from this man? The idea is that second-hand car dealers, they cheat you. They tell you, yeah, this car's great, it's got all this and that, and then you drive it home and you find after driving it for 20 minutes, and you find out that the chassis is held together with rubber bands. And it's a lemon, as they say. So in other words, the idea is if you wouldn't buy a used car from this man, why would you want him to be the president of the country? That's the idea. And actually, he got the name, I believe, even before the Watergate revelations, he got the name Tricky Dicky. They called him Tricky Dicky. Richard, the nickname of Richard is Dick or Dicky, so they called him Tricky Dicky. He's a slippery customer. So, trust of authorities, very low. Very, very low all over the world, because there's a history of misleading and exploiting people. But that trust is required in spiritual advancement. So, what do? We're caught here. Therefore, Shastra says that we should very carefully assess before accepting anyone as a spiritual authority. If we're very serious about spiritual life, we shall do so, because we have to submit. To be accepting is good, that is required. If one is always rebellious, no, I don't. If we go against everything that the authority says, then we don't have any authority, then we're on our own. But we require to accept authority. So Shastra says that we should judge very carefully. And Hari Bhakti Vilas says the prospective disciple should see the character and the teachings of the Guru for at least 1 year. And another place in Hari Bhakti Vilas, quoting from another Shastra, says for 3 years. And the Guru is also supposed to test the disciple. But there are many wrong ideas about spiritual life, that spiritual life, it's all arranged by God, and of course that is there, but if we are not sincere, then as Srila Prabhupada often said, if we want to be cheated, Krishna will arrange a cheater for us. So Krishna arranges for us by giving us shastric directions, which are conveyed in parampara. Arjuna had heard from authorities, but it's vague. Bhavatityanushushrama. I've heard from authorities, but who is your authority, Arjuna? Who is your specific authority? You may say, well, it says in Shastra like this and that, but we require a specific authority. Otherwise, we may quote this and that, and then we'll pull out, and someone else will pull out something else, and you can quote Shastra to, by quoting Shastra and interpreting it yourself, you can justify practically anything. So, that's not the point of Shastra. Shastra is meant to guide us. So there is widespread doubt of authority. And another thing is that the traditional authorities have broken down, both in secular life and in spiritual life, if we talk about the religious life of the Hindus, then the traditional Brahmin families, most of them are the members of those Brahmin families. They're mostly either in the Gulf or America, working in some office, or in India in some multinational corporation. And there are Brahmins still in the holy places, but in the holy places, those Brahmins, they don't seem to be very holy themselves. They often seem to be preoccupied with extracting money from the pilgrims. Now with the Hamdo Hamare Do running into its third generation or so, and the sending the children to school, so there aren't enough Brahmins to even be the priests in the temples, even if they wanted to be. Gaya, where there's the Vishnupad, so such a lack of Brahmins, then the Brahmins there are putting their sons, even 5 and 6 year old sons, to do the job of, so they don't miss any of the during the busy times, so that they don't miss any of the income or the opportunity to serve the people coming, as they might put it. They have their children in there also, although a five-year-old boy, it's not expected that he can know very much of what to do. So one thing is with reduction in the population, another is with modern education and various other factors. The traditional leaders of Hindu society are no longer in a position to lead as they used to. And also, due to modern education, also people are not that much inclined to follow. So in this vacuum of authority, we find various cheaters coming forth who proclaim themselves as religious authorities with no background, no training themselves, or just they have some charisma, and they cheat people. And there are so many. There's various Amas, Appas, Babas, and Dadas, and Sri Sris, and all kinds of cheaters who... But people, they feel they should have some spiritual authority, but they don't really want an authority. It's a funny thing that they think that they like to have a guru or a baba or something like this, but they don't really want to follow any authority. So the great successful spiritual authorities of the modern age in Hinduism are those who they give blessings, but they don't demand anything of you. They give blessings and they give all kinds of not really teachings, and they maybe show some magic and do some welfare work, water supply or hospitals or something like this, and they have pujas and so on, but no real teaching. They don't teach this material world is miserable. They're more likely to teach that how to live in this world, the art of living. Oh, what's that all about? How to overcome stress and how to develop personality traits and all this kind of thing. And people love it because, as Srila Prabhupada said, people like to be cheated. So some cheater comes along as an authority, and people might even quote what they say. But they themselves, they don't have any fixed basis in guru, sadhu, or shastra. Even they might have some guru in an orthodox parampara. Just like this Yogi Mahesh, who came to the Western world and taught what he called transcendental meditation. He had an orthodox guru who traced his line back to Sripad Shankaracharya. But what this Yogi Mahesh taught was nothing. Nothing of what he was taught. He said it's this transcendental meditation is a is a relaxation technique by which you can overcome stress and your brain will become energized. But Shankara, he taught that this, according to Bhagavad Gita, he didn't teach Bhagavad Gita exactly as it is, but he did taught that this world, life in this world is miserable and so on. So, we require spiritual authorities. People are very confused. I was just in Rishikesh. How long ago? 2 days ago? 3 days? 2 days ago I was there. So there's so many Western people come there to search out for sadhus. I spoke with some of them. I told them that if you really want spiritual life, you have to be very sincere to understand what is the truth, and you have to accept discipline. You can't just by wandering around and saying Jai Gange and imitating the sadhus smoking ganja, you're not going to get enlightenment. You have to be very serious and you have to be disciplined. But they're not serious. They in their own mind they're serious enough to come all the way to India, but they're looking for some sophisticated cheating. That's all. If we tell people you have to accept discipline, you have to accept authority, they're not very eager for this, but that is required. Actually, what happens is when there's breakdown of authority in society, then generally another authority becomes established because people need authorities. People say that, well, I don't accept any authority, but then they read books of others. In spiritual life, that's a very common thing in the West now. People say, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. Means I don't accept any religion, I don't accept any fixed guidance or teachings, but I'm very spiritual. And people like that, they like to read different books. That means that at least to some extent they're accepting some authority. We see that historically, in the Western world, Martin Luther rejected the authority of the Pope and of the Catholic Church. He articulated and expressed the great discontent that many people felt against the misuse of authority by the Catholic Church. In doing so, he himself became an authority. He said that, well, you just read the Bible and you follow what Jesus said. But he himself became an authority. So the Lutheran Church was established afterwards. Because if you are to follow the Bible and follow Jesus without the church, then, well, how do you do it exactly? You need someone to guide you. So a time of confusion, and certainly the world is confused at the present time, is also a time of opportunity for establishing what is the actual fact. One reason that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was successful in spreading Krishna consciousness, we may say, well, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he was acting to a large extent as a human being. He didn't go around showing a lot of miracles, as Jesus is purported to do. Although actually there were plenty of miracle workers in the ancient world. In fact, in the Roman Empire, there was a lot of opposition to Christianity, and they because they had their own miracle worker, and he said, our miracle worker is a bigger miracle worker than your miracle worker. He does better miracles. But he didn't claim to be God. So why do you claim Jesus to be God? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although certainly most ecstatic, he presented himself largely as a human being. So one reason he was able to be successful in spreading Krishna consciousness was, as many scholars have noted, that there was widespread discontent within Hindu society at the time. The rumblings of caste discontent, which has been rumbling on and on for hundreds of years since, that was there. The fact that someone of lower caste could convert to Islam was very dangerous for the whole edifice of Hinduism. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by teaching that Nicha Jati Nahe Krishna Bhajanera Yogya, those who are from a lower birth, they're not disqualified from worshipping Krishna. So that is a fact. It wasn't that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said it to get a following, but that teaching particularly appealed to many people who didn't want to be subjected to injustice in the name of caste, but at the same time they didn't want to give up the whole Vedic tradition and become beef eaters. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu provided an opportunity. Of course, there are many other factors also. The fact that Krishna consciousness is blissful. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in this way, he was accepted as an authority. Srila Prabhupada also, I've heard it said that Krishna arranged the hippie movement for him to, because there were, the hippie movement means there were many young and mostly intelligent people, mostly from middle class background, and more intelligent than the average, who became hippies due to a great discontent with society at that time. They rejected the materialism of their parents and adopted a quasi-spiritual kind of materialism of their own, which they imagined to be not materialistic. But in amongst all that hippieism, there was a search for something truly spiritual. And so Srila Prabhupada was able to, it was an opportunity that for spreading Krishna consciousness very widely. Earlier, much earlier in the 20th century, when Premananda Bharati was a Gaurya Vaishnava who went to America, and he made some followers of some sort or other, but it didn't make a big impact. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sent disciples to England in the 1930s, and they made some impression, but they weren't able to make a big impact because, one reason may be due to various social factors. If people feel more or less, if people feel content enough, they may be feeling discontent, but if they feel more or less content with their life as they are living it and don't really feel a need for a great change, then religious preachers who want to make a big change in people's lives, they're not likely to be so successful. And we really do ask for a lot of change. Most people who take to Krishna consciousness under the guidance of Srila Prabhupada and now his followers, taking to Krishna consciousness means a big change in many, many ways. There's hardly anyone who follows the four regulative principles, even in India. perfectly. I want to speak of rising early, putting aside several hours of your day every day only for spiritual life, and a kind of spiritual life which doesn't even promise you any material benefit, like I was talking about art of living or this and that. They think that you're going to get some benefit, that you'll become more relaxed and more tuned in so that you can face the rat race, and you can, or by transcendental meditation you can become more sharp in your mind, and then you can be a better operator in the material world. We don't, or we're not supposed to say things like that. We just say that this is purely for spiritual uplift. And if we are to practice Krishna consciousness seriously, then watching all nonsense things on TV, and that has to stop. So, and eating in restaurants, unless they're devotee restaurants, that has to stop. And eating anything cooked by non-devotees has to stop. So we're asking for a very big change, and in an atmosphere where people are very discontent with their present situation, then it's more likely that many people are going to accept such a change when they feel that there's something very much in need of change in their life. Otherwise, if people feel more or less content, then why should they take to Krishna consciousness? Or why should they change their life in such a drastic way? So the misuse of authority creates discontent in society. And in such a situation, there is an opportunity for establishing something else. Another great example is Buddha, who at the time of Buddha, there was the rigid caste system, which disallowed people from lower caste to have any spiritual experience of their own. They could only go through the Brahmins. Buddha made an egalitarian system. Everyone can take to Buddhism. And another thing is, on one hand, you had some people advocating enjoy yourself fully. And at the time, there was animal killing was going on left, right, and center in the name of Vedic sacrifices, with the idea we should just get fully into an enjoyment. And then on the other side, you had others who were fully detached from the world and performing very severe austerities, just like you still see a Kumbh Mela. You see someone who's held their hand up so long that it's completely dystrophied, and the nails are all grown out long. So that was quite common at the time. So Buddha said, middle path, take the middle path. Not too much, not total denial and torture of the body, and not indulgence of the body. So his teaching struck a chord with many people who felt that there was something wrong. And by presenting himself as a spiritual leader, he gave them an authority to follow. That, okay, here's Tathagata, the one who's gone there, the Buddha, he's self-realized. So he knows what he's talking about, and he's teaching us, so we should follow him. If there hadn't been such an atmosphere of discontent, underlying discontent, then his preaching could not have had such success. When people feel satisfied under some kind of authority, they tend not to doubt, when they feel that if by submitting to this authority I'll be perfectly content, then why should they doubt? That's, there's that very nice verse in the Stotaratna, Prashant, what is that? No, as usual, I forgot my verses. Can't remember. Prashanta Nishesha Manoratantaram Tadaham Aikantika Nitya Kinkaram Praharshiyashami Sanata Jivitam. I forgot the first line. Anyway, Yamuna Acharya prays to Lord Vishnu that when will that day come when I feel fully satisfied by fully submitting myself to you? As a maintained person, you are the master, I am the servant. I'd be fully satisfied in that relationship and given up all material desires, all material attachments. So he prays like that. If people feel I'm fully satisfied in this, then why should they go to anything else? But if the authority is exploitive or manipulative or just incompetent, then people feel dissatisfied. An authority might not be completely bad, but he just might be incompetent. Just like the prime minister of one major country that's having an election at the present time. Present prime minister is just a non-entity kind of person. Or in spiritual life, if the spiritual leader is just just in the position, but actually doesn't know how to guide, or is very shy, then people don't get any enthusiasm to follow him. The authority should be authoritative. He should know what he's talking about and be competent to guide others. So what if people are content? Just like there are many countries in this area, in fact all the countries in this area, in which people are, the majority of the population or the native population are very content with their, I don't know about their political situation, but with their religious situation. Then we have to go and plant some doubts. Actually, even with their religious situation, then we should see, plant doubts that, okay, you follow this religion. Anyway, I've had many discussions like this. Everyone will say their religion is the best. Why? How can you convince me that yours is best and not someone else's? And then say, well, because we follow such and such a book. And then they'll say, well, someone else says they also follow another book. And then if you say you follow this book, but then within the followers of that book, there are major divisions, and the divisions are so major that they're killing each other over it. So in this way, we should plant doubts. Why is that? Of course, we may not always plant doubts. Srila Prabhupada also said that we could encourage people, what if they have some faith in God, that we can encourage them to better follow that. But in religious systems which are based on violence and envy, or in which violence and envy are major factors, in which there's no clear knowledge of God, then we may present, this is the situation, why don't you think of this, why don't you think of that? People may accept. It's important that we have the right authority. If we don't get the right authority, then even if we accept an authority fully, we fully surrender, but if the authority is not correct, then it's called andhayatandhair upaniyamanasti pishatantra murudami badha. That means that the blind are following the blind, they all fall into the ditch. That's there in Shastra, that's also there interestingly, in the Western tradition. There are famous paintings of the blind following the blind, holding on and all falling down into the ditch. So by following the blind, if a blind man, he takes shelter of another blind man, or the other blind man says, yes, yes, I can see, I can show you where to go. But he's also blind. So they all fall down together. They all fall down into the ditch. The blind man who's leading might even think that he can see. Maybe he sees some light within his eyes, or he's simply, or whatever. But he's cheating. So we should accept authority. We have to accept authority if we are to make spiritual advancement. We can't find our own way. Even if, for instance, you want to go to the moon, and even if we accept at least when I was at school, the moon was about 200,000 miles away from the Earth, in its average distance from the Earth. Is it still, or did they revise that in between? Probably they didn't revise it. It's things like the distance of other galaxies that they revise, and they always revise when the Big Bang took place and when the first civilized humans emerged, and that's the kind of thing they revise. So according to them, the moon is 200,000 miles from the Earth. So that's not very far by astronomical reckoning, it's very close. But if you were to send a rocket up and you're 1% of a degree not on the right course, you're going to miss the moon. Right? Which makes me wonder how they went to the moon with using such a gross rocket. I mean, practically it's just like a firework. These rockets that they send into space, it's basically a firework. The same kind of fireworks that people use on Diwali. It's a very gross kind of instrument, and back in the 1960s, the computer technology they had was less sophisticated than you have in your iPhone today. So anyway, that's another point. But if you're slightly off, you're going to miss the target. So we better get right on target. We require an authority who is right on target. Otherwise, if there's a little deviation, then we're likely to inherit that deviation. Then we go off. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada was so insistent. Don't change, don't deviate, don't speculate. Of course, in this world, things are always changing and we have to change with it. To some extent. Just like, for instance, in the early days of ISKCON, the early devotees, they used to send all their clothes to the laundry. They'd have the outside laundry. You must have that here also, right? The the laundry where you put the coin in. You get the. Do you have that here? No. People do it themselves. Yeah. All right. But you know what I'm talking about. So devotees used to. That's a necessity, because even if you washed it yourself, there's no place to dry it. And if there is a place to dry it, I used to see this. My mother would put the cloth out to dry in the backyard, and within 1 hour it would be ice. It would just all become like ice. So you have to go to the laundry, and we throw all the clothes in, then it would all come back, and then they're just, okay, now I need a shirt, a dhoti, put it on, kopi, and all mixed up. No one had any clothes. And you get one sock and another sock from another pair. Should we still do that in ISKCON? Because we want to do it the way we did it when Prabhupada was here. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. The world is changing, always. We have to change with it, but we have to maintain the basic principles. And hear very carefully from Srila Prabhupada and from his representatives, those who represent him, so that we don't deviate or speculate, because if we do change things, then it might be more acceptable. Just like yogi, well, we may get many followers, like this yogi Mahesh. He comes from an orthodox parampara. I didn't say a bona fide parampara, I said an orthodox parampara. Mayavad parampara. But he changed so many things that what he was teaching was unrecognizable from the original thing. There are so many examples. Anyway, I won't go into that enough. About Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there were many people who used to say that he's so strict. If he just changed things a little bit and relaxed a little bit and just blended in with people a little bit, he would be accepted by everyone as the leader of the whole Gaudiya world. But he wasn't interested. The same thing about Prabhupada. When he came back from the West to India with Western followers, some people were very critical. What, you can't make Westerners into Hindus? You have to be born a Hindu. But many people were also very appreciative. But Srila Prabhupada, he at that time he could have made thousands and lakhs of followers. But he didn't. Because he insisted on stating the truth as it is, according to Shastra. He didn't compromise. But then his followers, those who prepared to follow him, they got benefit. What's the use of having millions of followers if they're 1/10 of a degree out? Then they'll miss the moon. And you'll miss the spiritual world. Of course, everything done in Krishna consciousness is all beneficial. But Krishna sends his devotees to teach us what is Krishna consciousness? As Srila Prabhupada emphasized by putting it in his Bhagavad Gita edition title, as it is. When I first saw it, I thought, that's really strange. What does it mean, Bhagavad Gita as it is? What it means is that Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing that the more than how many 600 editions of Bhagavad Gita, what does he say, in the English language, they're all or mostly not as it is. In other words, it's not really Bhagavad Gita at all. It's not that when Srila Prabhupada translated Bhagavad Gita that there weren't any editions in the Western world. Yeah, I'm just seeing. Where is that? In the introduction or the preface? No, it's in the introduction. I also thought it was in the preface. I looked in the preface, it's in the introduction. Of course, in America, Srila Prabhupada writes, Of course, there are many commentaries in English on the Bhagavad Gita, and one may question the necessity for another one. This present edition can be explained in the following way. Recently, an American lady asked me to recommend an English translation of Bhagavad Gita. Of course, in America, there are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita available in English, but as far as I have seen, not only in America, but also in India, none of them can strictly said to be authoritative. I've been speaking about authority here. Because in almost every one of them, the commentator has expressed his own opinions without touching the spirit of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Which then you might ask, well, what is the spirit of Bhagavad Gita as it is? And Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain. The spirit of Bhagavad Gita is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita itself. It is just like this. If we want to take a particular medicine, then we have to follow the directions written on the label. We cannot take the medicine according to our own whim or on the direction of a friend. It must be taken according to the direction on the label or the directions given by a physician. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita should be taken or accepted as it is directed by the speaker himself. The speaker of Bhagavad Gita is Lord Sri Krishna. He is mentioned on every page of Bhagavad Gita as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. So Bhagavad Gita is authoritative because it is spoken by the Supreme Authority, Bhagavan. But if we don't present, if we present it according to our own opinion instead of according to what Bhagavan wants to say, then it becomes non-authoritative. So Srila Prabhupada put this title, Bhagavad Gita as it is. This is what Krishna wants to communicate to us, not what someone else wants to communicate to us, taking the name of Bhagavad Gita. So we should be very careful to take it as it is. If we take it as it is, we achieve our perfection. If we take it in any other way, we're likely to be deviated. So this topic of authority, essential, we must accept authority. But then we have to do so fully, not just making a show of accepting some authority. We have to find out the authority that will properly guide us. It's a very difficult age, Kali Yuga, in every way. Those who are fortunate, they, in the midst of all this darkness of Kali Yuga, they will be delivered. Those who are unfortunate, they make some progress. But in Kali Yuga, if one is not strictly following Krishna consciousness, it's very difficult to be free even from sinful activities. Hare Krishna. Well, yeah, it's a big topic and could be elaborated on more and more, but I think I'm already over time. So I'll finish here. Hare Krishna.